No, let's do the EO's report.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to jump ahead to item number 18, the EO report.
Alrighty, we have water quality certifications section. I had a question from a board member, and it was just about the need to clarify the water quality certification table a bit. We have over in the extreme right-hand column some blank boxes, and the question was, what does that mean if there isn't a date there? And that means it's pending. So we will make sure that's more clear in future reports. Also, the we're using an acronym RSP, which I think is Rock Slope Protection. Is that right? Dominic decided to leave the room. So we will make sure that when we're using acronyms, that we make sure we define them somewhere in the document. Any other questions on the certification table?
Nope.
The Pismo Oceano Vegetable Exchange, we provided our response to Mr. Bookout, and my understanding is that Mr. Bookout wanted to address the board, but he's, I don't know that he's here. Is Mr. Bookout here? He's not here either. So I'd suggest we just come back to that if necessary, unless, well, it'd probably be best if the board even holds any questions on it at this point.
Okay.
Under cleanup reports on page 6, we have some information on a series of spills from the Greca oil and gas facilities, and this is a situation where we have a separation of functions regarding enforcement actions, similar to what we're talking, or is the case with the CMC spills that we were talking about a few minutes ago. So we have to kind of walk a fine line here, but we did want to at least provide the basic information for the board, and of course a lot of this has been reported in the newspapers, so
Roger.
A lot of it's public information.
I'm sorry, excuse me, which item are you on?
The cleanup reports.
Page 6.
Page 6.
Page 6.
The Greca.
Of 18. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Start with the basics. Number 18.
Yeah.
So, again, just want to warn the board that this is something that's going to be coming before you as an enforcement item, so okay. Our attorney may jump in and throw the red flag.
I have a question. Have we had any staff down there?
Yes.
Is it?
Say, have we had?
Yeah, have we had staff in, looking
yes,
at these
Rich
spills?
Chandler is our engineering geologist who has been going to the site.
Because I hear all, you know, I just hear on the news all this stuff that's going on, and is there any basis?
Good morning. I'm Rich Chandler.
Good morning.
Yes, I've been out to both the major release at Zaca and the major release at the Bell Ponds. The agency that's taking the lead on the cleanups on both of those is Fish and Game, because they have emergency funds to actually jump in and take over the situation and immediately begin a cleanup.
Okay. I guess there's not much more to talk about until it comes before us. Like, I just was wondering if somebody was down there seeing what was going on, really going on.
Now, Rich has been down there several times.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I can update you on that have happened since this report was issued. On January 13th, the regional board hosted a meeting of various agencies that are involved with these Greca releases. That included Fish and Game, the Division of Oil and Gas, US EPA, Santa Barbara County Fire, Santa Barbara County Building and Safety, the ASP, the APCD, and representatives from Assemblyperson Nava. We all discussed our options on what we could do as far as enforcement and preventative actions. On January 27th, there was a release of PCBs at the Bradley Three Island lease. January 29th, there was another release at the Bell Ponds. On February 3rd, there was a release at the Security lease. That one was a relatively small one, only about 100 gallons, but it did impact a waterway. As of late January, the county had shut down operations on the Bell lease, the Bradley Three Island lease, the UCal lease, and the Zaca lease for unsafe conditions. The EPA has issued cleanup orders for the Bell lease, the Bradley Three Island lease, the Zaca lease, and the Security lease. And EPA has updated the initial Bell Pond release at 195,000 gallons. That includes both produced water and oil. And the EPA cleanup order for the Bell Ponds has also required them to remove those ponds. So those are kind of recent events that didn't make it into this report.
How is it that EPA gets directly involved with a release like this even before we do?
I don't know how legally they can become involved, but again, as with Fish and Game, they have emergency funds that allow them to step in immediately,
right,
which is something that we don't have.
But I mean, in terms of EPA, do they haven't issued them a permit, have they? How is it that they get involved so quickly?
They would have emergency response authority for
EPA.
He was talking about issuing an order to remove ponds and things, and that would be under their both RCRA and probably Superfund.
I thought he mentioned Fish and Game has that. Does EPA also?
Yes, they have emergency response funds, but he mentioned EPA issuing orders to take action.
Right.
And they would have that authority.
Also, isn't a factor that EPA already has an enforcement action against GRECA? And I thought GRECA was basically on probation.
That was related to illegal injection that was going on at the Santa Maria Asphalt Refinery. It was unrelated to any spill releases. And
Okay. According
to what EPA has told me, that event has nothing to do with these releases, so that probation doesn't really count in this case.
Other than maybe EPA involvement with GRECA.
EPA is scrutinizing GRECA very, very closely.
Okay. Why is it that we have not issued an industrial stormwater permit for any of their facilities?
I'm not a stormwater person, but it's
okay.
My understanding that federal legislation exempted oil field activities from stormwater plans. There are some exceptions to that, and we are looking at those exceptions to perhaps draft our own stormwater plan.
One of the exceptions has to do with them having discharge that affects surface waters, which they obviously have had. So that was one of our options, was then to basically say that they have not, they've lost their exemption. So that's something that we decided to pursue. Rich mentioned this multi-agency group that got together, and this was something that I was calling for, even though we have a separation of functions. The way I was looking at it was not from what the enforcement action might be for the past spills, but how do we get ahead of the curve and get GRECA to get on the ball in terms of maintenance of their facilities, because obviously they've got these ongoing and repeated problems, that, and a lot of them seem to be maintenance related. So I thought that we should try to pool our authority with all the agencies and come up with, I was hoping for perhaps an outside auditor, an expert in oil field facilities that GRECA would have to pay for, to provide an objective analysis of the facilities, of their operations plan, their maintenance plan, their replacement, their testing of equipment, their corrosion protection, all those good things, and come up with a list of tasks that then the regulatory agencies could say, okay, GRECA, what are you going to do to implement these? And so, as Rich said, the multi-agency group got together just recently.
What was their reaction to your suggestion?
I don't know how far along you got with
EPA. Had already been thinking along those same lines, and we'll be coordinating with them so we don't step on each other's toes, so that one agency ends up taking the lead on this. But yeah, there were other agencies who had already been thinking along these same lines.
From what I've read in the local paper, it looks like the county is also thinking about that.
Yeah, as I said, the county has closed down four of their facilities. After these two major releases, they began performing expedited inspections on all of their facilities and finding numerous violations. They've closed down four of those facilities.
And they have a history from, now this is what I've read in the paper, of like over 200 previous violations going back over a period of time?
I could show you our binders that contain all of the oil-filled spill reports for the Central Coast, and about probably 90% of those at least would be GRECA. It does amount to hundreds of them over the past 3 years. Hmm. Most of those, I'd like to say, are relatively minor, you know, a release of 5 to 10 gallons within secondary containment.
Can I interrupt for a second? I think it's starting to get too much into the details of what you would be considering in the enforcement action, and probably best not to.
We're just getting to the good stuff, Francis.
You know, I know, what a troublemaker
hearsay,
I am.
Right, the hearsay.
I told you she'd throw the red flag.
Okay. All right.
One more thing I'd like to add is that these other agencies have been proceeding with the emergency actions. Typically, those emergency actions require cleanup only of what's visible. And following those emergency cleanup actions, it's quite possible the regional board may require additional groundwater monitoring, creek monitoring, those types of things. So.
Okay. Well, I guess if the board was to give staff any direction on this, it would be to... move forward, I think, in the way you're moving forward to try to get some plan or permit in effect that would prevent or minimize, you know, these releases from happening in the future.
Yeah, and part of our thinking, we mentioned the stormwater permit angle.
Right, I think that's great.
Part of our thinking there is that a key component of stormwater for industry is to have a pollution prevention plan.
Right.
And that's, you know, the prevention, that's one of the keys here.
Right. It seems like they're not thinking about prevention at all.
Right.
At this point. So, yeah, I would encourage you to pursue that.
Okay.
Anything else on GRECA? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Underground tank summary.
Oh, we're still on the EO report, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's page 7 of your report.
Okay.
At the bottom here.
I've got a... Michael, I'm not sure which laptop it's on, but I've got some slides here. It says something about ACL. Any questions on the... underground tank summary report?
No new cases?
I don't know. Do we have any new cases?
The table doesn't have it.
I'm Chris Adair, Waterboard staff. We have a couple of cases that have come to us that are soil-only cases at this point, and so we don't have jurisdiction over them, but that's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
And the next one is the TMDL, Total Maximum Daily Load Program. Any questions? I will maybe take this opportunity. Chris, you started to stand up. Could you complete standing up, please? Oh, look out. We have Chris's colliding. Whoa. That was close. A Chris collision. What I wanted to point out. Chris Adair for the previous part. Chris Rose for the Total Maximum Daily Load program. And we may have informed the board previously, I don't recall, but congratulations to Chris on being promoted to supervising or senior environmental specialist. I'm not sure I got the title right, but anyway, he's our senior over the Total Maximum Daily Load program.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm taking over Lisa's position, so as she moves.
Those are big shoes to fill.
Yes, figuratively
you
speaking.
You might recall that Lisa became section manager. And so, as Chris says, we're basically backfilling Lisa's position, and that's been almost a full year. So, unfortunately, the wheels turn slowly, but we're happy to have Chris in that position.
Anyway.
And we have, Chris, we have, three TMDLs coming to the board in March, I believe.
Right.
I have one question on TMDLs.
Ready?
Just to understand, do we get a report at some point where we see like a summary of what we've accomplished with TMDLs across the region? Like how many of our water bodies have TMDLs in place and just like numbers?
Mm-hmm.
How many are working toward the plan being final? And it would be great to see a summary because
sure.
I know we've seen a lot of progress.
Sure.
I guess that's what I'm getting at.
We can make that so. If you'd like to get like a status report now and then about the TMDLs that have been approved and which ones are in the works, so to speak.
That would be great.
Sure, we can do that.
Because I know Lisa covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
So you want to.
Could you make sure you add something about implementation of the approved ones? I'm often asked to explain what we get from the TMDL program, and I usually have to say something like, well, we're not far enough along to tell yet.
Sure. Okay. So I'll do a status report and include not only the ones that we've been working on but have been approved and then the ones that have been implemented and the progress that is being made.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. All right. I'll skip to page 11, administrative civil liability enforcement cases. And I've got some slides to help focus on what I want to talk about here. And basically what I want to do was request that the board change your level of delegation regarding settling administrative civil liability complaints. The board has delegated to the executive officer, in this case me, the authority to settle cases for less than $100,000. So here's our current situation as far as how that delegation works. I issue an administrative civil liability complaint, or in some cases the assistant executive officer does because of separation of functions. And then if there's a settlement offer, if it's less than $100,000, you've given me the authority to decide if that's appropriate. If it is, we provide notice, consider any comments we receive during that notice. And if it still seems appropriate, we would go ahead and settle that and inform the board. It's you might recall that we've had several of the minimum penalty cases, for example, for stormwater cases that have been pretty small, like $3,000, $6,000. And if they waive the hearing and pay, I'd simply inform you that the case has been settled. So that would be similar. If it's greater, and also if it's a supplemental environmental project that's part of the agreement, then we would bring that settlement agreement to the board. Now, the board would not have a hearing on it. It would just be a matter of whether or not you accept the agreement. If you don't accept it, then we'd have to re-notice a hearing. And also, for cases that are less than $100,000, I may still bring that to you if it's, for example, a case where you've had significant involvement, and I think it's something that you want to hear, or if say, we have some significant comments on it, controversy. And if it's greater than $100,000, we either have a settlement to bring to the board or a hearing without me having the authority to settle that, and then the board considers an administrative civil liability order. So what we're proposing is a pretty minor revision. If you can go to the next slide. So our proposed board direction, I've highlighted the changes here, basically increasing that cap from $100,000 to $300,000. Everything is pretty much the same. But one change here is if the order is not paid or has a supplemental environmental project, then and it's less than $100,000, then I could still issue an administrative civil liability order with the supplemental environmental project. And the difference here is that we haven't done that in the past. We brought those to the board, not because it's not within your delegated authority. It's just been our practice. So, in other words, the board has delegated to the executive officer everything that can be delegated according to the Porter-Cologne Act. There are very specific items, adopting waste discharge requirements, permits, cease and desist orders, basin plan amendments, that you cannot delegate. And so, of course, you have them. And that's standard with the regions. And so, actually, under the current delegation, I could go ahead and issue an administrative civil liability order, because that's not something that Porter-Cologne says the regional board has to do. So that's why I say it's just been our practice in the past. And so all I'm saying is that we're proposing that we would fully exercise that delegation here. And then if it's greater than $300,000, we could either bring a consent order to the board, or we'd have a hearing very similar to the previous existing process. And like I said, I can still bring a matter to the board anyway, even if it's less than the $300,000. Next, please. So why, you might ask. And so here's an example that is either identical or very close to a case that we had recently. So the prosecution squad issues the administrative civil liability complaint. The prosecution team was originally thinking in this neighborhood. They issued it for $95,000 because in discussions, they thought there was a possibility for settling. Basically, if it was less than $100,000, and partly because of efficiency, not just on the part of staff, but also because of efficiency on the part of the responsible party or the discharger, because if they don't go to hearing, they save their staff time, they save attorney time, sometimes it's outside counsel time, which gets expensive, they have some certainty as opposed to going to hearing. So there is incentive on the part of both the responsible party and the staff to perhaps settle for something than what might be the originally thought okay or appropriate amount. So what happened in this case was the responsible party did offer to settle for $95,000, proposed a supplemental environmental project, which the prosecution team thought was good, considering the benefit of efficiency and the proposed supplemental environmental project. And this was where we had separation of functions, so I was not involved with that. So both you and I saw this at the same time. It was appended to a waste discharge requirement, basically as backup information on compliance history. And so actually both you and I thought, well, that looks like it might be more serious than the proposed, at that time it was just a proposed settlement for $95,000. So the board said, no, we don't want you to settle, but we want to have a hearing. However, after all was said and done, the hearing result was assessing a penalty in an order of $130,000, although I think a couple of board members actually said we thought the $95,000 was okay. It was a split decision on the part of the board. A couple board members thought it should actually be more. I recommended this amount after all was said and done, and basically you as board members were on different sides of that and said that's a good compromise and adopted that as the order. So again, well, why would our proposal be better? If we'd had a $300,000 cap and staff thought that this was the appropriate amount for that violation, there's a really good chance that staff would have just settled for the $120,000, because the responsible party still would have looked at it and thought they can save staff time, they can save attorney time, they have certainty. And by having more latitude there, we think it would give us an opportunity to streamline and be a little more efficient. In terms of practical considerations, I think as you get up above $150,000, $200,000, there aren't going to be that many people that propose to settle anyway. So we're probably not talking about very many cases that would actually be in that margin where the board might say, gee, if it's that serious, we want to take a look at it. But like I say, I think by having a greater range, we're going to have more efficiency in some of these cases that are on the lower end of that range. And Chair Young will probably verify that one of the things that that the chairs were talking about was efficiency improvements, streamlining. How can we make the whole board process a little smoother? And is that it for the slides? Oh. So there's the recommendation, which basically is just increasing the cap, because, like I said, your delegation already allows for me to issue these ACL orders. I'm just simply saying that this would provide clarity as far as your direction to be able to do that. So that's it.
Let me ask
questions?
You this. Yeah, the question I have is what opportunity does the public have to comment on a SIP?
Back up.
That you might handle administratively.
Right here, we provide notice. So once the complaint goes out, it goes out to our interested parties, and the cover letter provides a procedure and basically provides that notice. Then we have an opportunity, a period of time for folks to submit comments on that.
And just to add to that, if for example a complaint goes out for a certain amount of money but doesn't mention a SEP, if then the settlement is to propose a SEP, it would need to be re-noticed to provide an opportunity for comment on that, which would be a different agreement than
okay.
just the money amount.
And I take it at that point, board members themselves could comment.
Yes.
As, I guess, members of the public in a sense.
Right. And that's something that I was talking to Francis about yesterday, is that a board member may say, you know, I don't think that looks right. So, okay, that's good enough.
And it used to be that the law said that if the discharger waives the right to a hearing, no hearing can be held. But now it gives the discharger a right to waive the right to a hearing, but a hearing can still be held, either because comments are received. It doesn't even say why, but for example, if comments are received that indicate that the amount proposed isn't appropriate, or board members say we prefer to have a hearing on this, or whatever reason, then the executive officer can say, okay, we're having a hearing. And this the document should so indicate, so the discharger knows that that's possible.
Okay. Any board questions on this? Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, I'm not clear on the process in terms of how we would see an ACL complaint going out at the point that you've just issued it. We normally see these things coming before us through the hearing agenda, and as I recall, that I think the case you're referring to, that was listed on consent, and we pulled it from consent. But otherwise, how would I have had a chance to see the detail that we get in staff report and my ability to question and express my concerns about Clean Water Act violations in that case? Came because I had the full staff report and I had some of the history of violations. And so what would the process then be for us to have that level of information so we can then say this doesn't look right?
Right. And actually that was not before you as consent item. It was simply there as backup information to let you know that's what was going on. So that was a separate process. It wasn't for board action at that time. But nevertheless, the prosecution team's recommendation was to settle for that amount. Like I said, I didn't see it until you saw it. And I, frankly, had the same reaction the board did. Once we went to hearing and we started realizing there really were compensating factors there, one of the things is that if you just see the complaint, you're basically seeing the prosecution team's best case being put forward. We don't provide opportunities for defense in terms of providing, you know, what the defense attorney might be doing. So you're basically seeing the worst case scenario as presented by the prosecution team. When you get to the hearing and you know, we delineate all the factors and all that, the discharger has an opportunity to discuss the pros and cons. And that's what happened with that example case, is then I think all of us said, oh, yeah, there were some some other factors here. It wasn't quite as severe as it initially looked, and just looking at the stark violations in the complaint. And so there's that aspect of it. And to answer your question as far as how you would know, we would copy you, the board, when the complaint goes out. So you during that comment period, you would have an opportunity to contact me and let me know if you have concerns about it.
I have no, I mean, I think what you're proposing is a good step in the right direction in terms of efficiency and streamlining goals, so I can support that. I just am happy to hear that we still have the opportunity to take a look at some of these things as they move forward, especially those borderline ones.
Right. And when I say you can contact me, that's not as a board, because, in other words, you couldn't get together with group email, compare notes, and contact me. It would have to be individual board members, and then I would consider any comments that we receive. But basically, if one board member says this doesn't look right, then I think that's where we'd say, okay, we need to bring it to the board.
You don't have a proposed order for us, or a language like an emotion?
No,
for us to do?
The previous, like I said, the delegation authority really covers this already. We already have a delegation agreement. So the previous $100,000 limit, I mean, the existing cap,
right,
that was by board discussion and direction to me and how you wanted me to carry it out. So all I'm asking is for your direction to increase that to $300,000. Okay. It's not covered in the written delegation agreement.
I think that's fine. I just would like something in writing added to make sure that the board is copied in on these complaints that are proposed for being settled for less than $300,000.
Right.
Just so that doesn't get lost, you know, through time,
right,
as a requirement.
Okay.
So do you want to append the delegation somehow, or what? How?
It'd just be board direction if you're in agreement on this.
So where's it going to be memorialized?
In the minutes.
In the minutes. Okay. Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah. I really don't have a problem with it either. I have some of the same concerns. So you say we're going to be copied on what? The complaint?
Right.
Which is, you know, the bare-faced complaint by the prosecution team. That doesn't let me know or make any decisions on whether this is working in the way we want it to. So maybe what we could have is, once the thing is settled, so we could sort of track it ourselves, maybe we could get some sort of summary of why, you know, sort of rationalizing why the settlement was what the amount it was. Because often staff has a different take on these things than the board does.
Right.
And so I would just like to maybe get a little idea of why staff came to the conclusions it did and why they thought this was a good settlement. And, I mean, I have no problem with it, but maybe just a summary at the end. I don't know.
Right there it says inform board, and I've done that in the past. You know, we said we've settled this case, but I think what you're saying is to provide more of the backstory.
Maybe a one-page backstory on why this thing that looks so terrible in the complaint was settled for an amount that I might think and other folks might think is not really.
You're talking about after the fact.
After the fact, right. just so that we can keep track of it and say, well, this isn't working, or yeah, this is just what we wanted, sort of thing.
Sure. And I would point out that in the past, for those complaints that are less than $100,000, where I have informed the board, there have been occasions where the board has said, fine, it looks to me, however, like maybe this one should have been a little bit more. We take that into account going forward. And I'd say gradually, as far as a general trend, the penalties have tended to go up over time, which is part of the reason for wanting to increase this delegation amount.
Fine idea.
I'll support it.
Would it be appropriate to have a motion? Do we have any minutes?
Certainly.
Okay.
To approve the recommendation.
So we need a motion to approve the recommended changes to the administrative civil liability enforcement authority that we've delegated.
Mr. Chair, before we vote on it, I just have one quick comment. I don't have any qualms what's being happened, but I want the staff to be sensitive that some of these ACLs are extremely important in certain communities that sometimes, and the one that Mr. Briggs was talking about, I think that was one of the board members that spoke up and wanted that pulled. It gives the public an opportunity to either comment on these particular ACLs, but also lets the public know that we're doing something about them, because there's constant questions from the public, what are we doing about this particular issue or that issue? And sometimes we don't have the information yet, or it's in the pipeline, but if sometimes that these sensitive discharges or spills that in certain areas should be heard, no matter what the dollar amount is. So I think the staff have to keep that in mind, and if I remember correctly, Roger, the one that you're probably referring to was in San Juan Bautista?
It's close by.
Yeah, close by. So that was a critical issue for the community in that particular area to know that we're doing something about that particular issue.
Yeah, it was a high-profile case, and that I think I mentioned the example of items that I would bring to the board if I knew that there was a particular interest in them. And for example, if I'll tell you right now that if the prosecution team suggests a settlement for $299,000 on the Greca case, I'd say I think the board wants to hear it. You're gonna kick me. So we're looking for a motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I'll move the change.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Motion carries. Maybe we can finish up with a couple of the remaining items in the EO report so we could then move on to 15.
Okay, the last item that I was going to mention is the supplemental that we handed out to you, which is the letter that we sent yesterday to Dorothy Rice, Executive Director of the State Board, regarding the draft enforcement policy. And our area of comment had to do strictly with supplemental environmental projects. Basic gist of it is the current policy was putting a cap of 25% of penalties that could be applied to supplemental environmental projects on a per case basis. And we disagreed with that. We recommended 75%, as we have previously, to the Office of Enforcement that's drafting this policy. And we said, as a fallback, if they don't agree with that, that it would be okay to fall back to the formula specified by the legislature in the mandatory minimum penalty provisions of the code, which says that it's the step can be $15,000 plus 50% of the penalty amount that exceeds $15,000. And further, that the regional boards could exceed the 50% maximum if we had findings which indicated that it's necessary to exceed that guideline of the state board. And my example here was if we have a really good, solid supplemental environmental project proposed and its feasibility is really dependent on the percentage being some higher figure.
I just want to go on be on record that I agree with the letter. I think it's a terrible change to make, and the staff and the board members have made that clear to the enforcement group before, but they seem to ignore completely what we've said about it. I'm afraid that this could essentially render SEPs meaningless and unworkable if they come down to 25%. Only very large penalties are going to result in supplemental environmental projects that are that really get anything done. So I'm very disappointed in this. I don't know why the State Board is not hearing us on this. It sounds like some of the attorneys in Sacramento are kind of taking the charge. And where is our board representation on the State Board on this matter?
Yeah, I think part of the pressure is from a region or two that does not like SEPs, and I tried to address that here and just said there's an easy solution. They don't have to approve any SEPs. But why penalize all the other regional boards that find this as a very beneficial tool in having the flexibility to do some things that are outside of our regular budget and do some on-the-ground projects that are very worthwhile for the watersheds? Yesterday was the comment deadline, so we got that letter in before the deadline.
The current policy proposed, is that the one that's coming from the State Board itself, or is that the one that is coming from the Enforcement Division?
The Office of Enforcement,
okay,
headed by Reed Sato, is proposing the
25%.
Policy.
Yeah, so
right.
What opportunities do we still have to kind of lobby our case to TAM and the board, the State Board?
Harvey, do you know when the meeting is for a workshop? I don't know if they're going to workshop first.
Harvey Packard, I believe the workshop is the 19th. It's either the 19th or 20th, and I think it's the 19th. And
okay.
It is just a workshop with no board action at that time.
With February?
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Press, do you want to attend and lobby on behalf of the board's position at the workshop?
On the 19th
of February.
Day is that?
Into.
Well, I'll look and see if I can do that.
I mean, that would be the opportunity, you know, for someone to represent the board's position.
Mm-hmm. Where's the? It's in Sacramento?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's at the Cal EPA building.
Okay. Well, maybe you can give me the information about the workshop.
Mm-hmm. Would any other board member, if Dr. Press can't do it, would any of the board member like to take that lead? Can't go. Gary? John?
Well, go ahead and send me the information. I probably can't go, but I'll at least get it to me.
And, you know, send me also. It just depends on what's going on.
I just have a question on this.
Go ahead.
So as I understand it, then the amount of money that doesn't go to the SEP would go into the
cleanup and abatement account.
Abatement account. And isn't it true that in the past, at least at some point, that account was cleaned out to go into the general fund during some
swept? They call it sweeping.
Sweeping, right?
And I believe that was done a long time ago. It hasn't been done in recent years,
but it is a possibility.
There's that threat.
Yeah.
Right.
That sort of concerns me.
Well,
too.
And also, actually, some ACLs go into that fund, the cleanup and abatement account, and some go into what's called the waste discharge fund, and that does not have the same limitations as the cleanup and abatement account. It's a different fund. How it can be spent, and it can be spent on staff costs, I believe. And
yeah, I'm just concerned about where this money goes when it goes up to Sacramento. So I think, yeah.
And I don't know how you feel in terms of representation of the board, but we could attend as staff and, you know, reiterate our statement here. I'm not sure how much good that would do. But.
Well, how effective do you think it is to have board members attend and weigh in? I mean, my concern is that not only are there not going to be good supplemental environmental projects, but in a way there's a kind of you're taking money that could have been stayed in the region and improved water quality, and it goes into the cleanup and abatement account unless that gets swept and used for deficit reduction, which I suppose could happen, or in a way you're subsidizing other boards that are more successful at getting money out of the cleanup and abatement account. And if you don't have confidence that you're going to be able to get money out of the cleanup and abatement account to do similar things, because Reed Sato keeps telling us that we should be making use of the cleanup and abatement account. Ask for money. But if it's not coming from there, or it's not applicable to the same kinds of projects, then in effect, the Region 3's penalties are subsidizing somebody else's cleanup and abatement grants. And I think that's just not fair. It's not effective. Doesn't help our water quality.
Well, at the last Management Coordinating Committee meeting, where the executive officers get together with State Board management, Barbara Evoy, who manages the cleanup and abatement account, was talking about changing the rules of the road there so that basically the money that comes in from the region is then earmarked, at least a certain percentage of it. And I thought we were talking about a minimum of 50%, but that it is earmarked for the region and available for projects, so that there would be a greater expectation that we would be able to utilize those funds in our region. And I don't know if that, Harvey, I don't know if you know if that's reflected in the most recent draft or not.
I didn't see that in the draft, no.
Okay.
It does have the part about where the regional board could ask for more than 25%, and the state board would act within 30 days to review that or not. So there is that provision.
Okay. What do we want to do? Just get notice and attempt. We've already put in our comments in writing, so let us kind of give us a heads up on it.
Yeah, one angle here, and I hate to put the burden on you, Dr. Press, but you have, I don't know where you stand with your survey of statewide use of SEPs, but that probably offers a unique perspective. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know how far along you are in that work.
Well, maybe let's see if I can get time at the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point in me doing 6 hours of travel for them if they're not going to take a presentation about the data or recommendations, then it's not a very good use of
right.
of my time.
Okay, we'll find out about that then.
Good.
And I'll talk with you directly.
Okay. Couple of other items in the EO report, though,
mm-hmm.
Rich, before we leave it, on page 9, the food safety.
Right.
Do we have any kind of update on the loss of buffers and that ongoing
I don't.
Effort?
I don't.
Okay. Perhaps so that we don't need to wait for it right now, we could be emailed kind of a follow-up on that.
Okay.
And what staff has determined from any field visits as to whether there's a continual process of removing these buffers or if things settle down, and what the, you know, what's happening with the proposed language changes, you know, to the marketing agreement.
Right. And this, let's see, either this month or next month, staff is going to be doing inspections on a large grant that we have for the Monterey County Resources Conservation District, which includes installation of these vegetated practices.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a firsthand look at how successful they've been as far as getting those in place. And I'm sure the whole food safety thing will be covered there, because that's in the Salinas Valley
Well, then let's just have an update in the next EO report.
Okay.
Instead of an email in the interim would be fine. Okay, and then last thing, on page 12, budget information. I don't know how staff, the board feels about this, but if you notice, we're going to be hit with a 10% reduction in general funds. And that the timber, TMDL, underground tanks, and water quality control planning are all funded. Let's see. Only timber and planning programs are solely funded by the general fund. So my sense is that at least timber can't absorb any kind of a hit. I know.
Underground tanks is not supported solely by general funds.
Right. Only planning and timber, but I hate to see, timber, because it's already less than a person, right, at 0.75?
0.6.
Yeah, I mean, to cut that at all is, we're already barely keeping abreast, if that, with that workload. So our preference, I think, would be to not cut that at all.
Okay. I'm not sure we'll have that discretion, but we'll try.
Okay. All right. Okay. Is that it for the EO's report?
Yes.
Okay. What I wanted to do, because we did take public forum kind of out of order while we were waiting for Mr. Almey to come, we didn't want to start without you, so we did make good use of our time. I notice we have a few more speaker cards. I want to handle those. I've only got three or four. Let's see. It's growing. Two, three, four. We already did Mr. Greening. So we'll take those, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go right into 15. Okay? Mr. Shalfronos? Okay.
Good idea. Right
on. Okay. You want the break now?
Whatever you say.
Okay. All right. So, Jim...